Good morning. Welcome to the 2014 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Heather Fletcher, Senior Editor of Target Marketing Magazine. Thanks for coming to Think Like a Marketing Scientist, sponsored by Acton. Before we get started, let's go over some technical pointers. So, first, if you have stuck slides or loss of sound, it may mean you need to refresh your browser. A couple shortcuts include pushing F5 on your PC or Command-R on your Mac. If you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions. Time permitting, we'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the features on this console. Check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn more about the console. Finally, if you would like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, August 11th. Watch your email for more detail for more details. Please welcome Tim McMullen, founder at Red Pepper. During the next 40 minutes, he'll cover how to develop a more flexible and experimental marketing plan, engage with your audience across channels and devices, build a lab marketing culture by giving your team space and trust, effectively use technology as a means, not an end. Take it away, Tim.
Hi, thank you for that introduction, and thank you guys for having me. Hopefully you can hear me all right. If you cannot, please shoot a question into the question box, and they'll let me know, and hopefully we'll have a good time today. Doing webinars is usually a little bit trickier because you don't have an audience to both make you nervous and to look at and kind of make it feel a little bit more natural. So hopefully we'll get through this and it'll feel good to you guys. And again, my name is Tim McMullen. I am not a professional speaker. I'm a marketer by trade, and I love sort of keeping up with the innovation that can come inside of marketing. And that's what kind of has led us to this presentation today. And we've given it a couple dozen times actually now. And I love sort of kind of sharing what we believe and what we learn. And hopefully you'll take some real value from this presentation. We want it to be as practical as possible. So thank you again for having me. And we'll kind of dive right in. We are talking about what we're kind of calling the era of the marketing scientist. And we're going to talk about how that relates to marketing in ways that it will never change and in ways that it's going to constantly change, and how that's applied to successful marketing these days. I want to start with something that I believe will never change, and that is kind of a key fundamental of marketing. And it's the sense, it's the thought that the closer a consumer is to a brand, the more they talk and the more they shop. The only thing that's evolving is the environment in which we foster that connection. And that's what we have to think about. We're always trying to bring the consumer closer to the brand, and now we just have different ways and new ways to do it. But that same fundamental exists. Well, one of the things that we sort of know to be true that's shaping the environment in which we're in is very connected to the Moore's Law, which was a technology sort of hypothesis established back in 1965 that said the technology inside semiconductors was going to double every 2 years and continue for like the next 15 years. And what's happened is that was over 50 years ago, and this theory has proven true, and it's been doubling ever since. Well, I'm kind of here to introduce the Red Pepper Law of marketing technology, in which marketing will evolve and is evolving now on the same curve. This is true because marketing and technology are very intertwined. We're going to talk about that today. And as a marketer, we need to know what's coming next and how to deal with it and how to leverage it. So new technologies are being invented every year, as we now know, and new social platforms are being adopted every day. how consumers shop and interact with brands and share with each other is constantly evolving. And when consumers' behaviors change, so do the rules of marketing. I sort of propose that the new marketing landscape looks more like this on your screen, is that marketing, technology, and human behavior have kind of all merged together. And we have to stop thinking just like marketers and think more like scientists, which is where the name of the presentation came from, like marketing scientists. Scientists, they experiment. They use what they learn to move forward, and they're always exploring new hypotheses. This goes against sort of the traditional way of marketing planning. And I kind of believe the days of rigid marketing plans set in stone at the beginning of the year, those are kind of done. I'm not saying we shouldn't plan, but we have to build some certain criteria into our plan so that we can be successful. So there's four criteria that I'm going to talk about today that really go into what makes a marketing scientist. And their flexibility, they're intersecting with the consumers' lives, and they're creating a lab-like culture, and then they're focusing on the outcome, not the technology. And the first one I want to talk about is creating that lab-like culture. What's on your screen now is actually a picture of our core values here at Red Pepper, but there's two of them that I believe that every company in the world should have as a core value. The first one is if we're not changing, we're dying. And my belief is the second a company is formed, they start to become biased and rigid in their ways and things that were successful, and they want to maintain that success, and therefore they sort of block and defend the evolution of their company. And companies start evolving slower and slower over time, and therefore markets and consumers and competitors sort of leapfrog them or leave them behind. A lot of companies struggle with this. This is sort of why Blockbuster didn't come up with Netflix or why Sony didn't come up with iTunes, that kind of thing. And so if every company should really, really focus on evolution, even in creative environments, people fear change. So it's very important to sort of lift up change as something to embrace. And the second core value that I like to sort of lift up is that we actively support personal growth, because I believe that not only do you have to lift up the fact that you have to embrace change, but you have to grow, you have to do that change through the growth of your people. And so we're constantly pushing people to grow. In today's sort of Google environment, it is so much easier to push people to grow and learn new things and unlearn old things than it has ever been before. Those two core values are, I believe, sort of the foundation to having a more innovative and forward-thinking environment. And so that's ingredient number one. There's my four characteristics right there. So the second one is intersecting with the consumer's lives. We've all heard the term the marketing funnel and sort of what that looks like. And this is kind of old news that the marketing funnel does not look the way like a traditional funnel anymore. It's very dynamic. The way the consumer interacts with that brand, they come in and out of that relationship. It's not a direct funnel. They may enter in via a social relationship or via peer conversation or via shopping experience or whatever it may be, and it's just no longer sort of a linear path down a funnel. And we have to sort of think about that when we're planning. It actually looks a little bit more like this. You know, it's all about context now. We have to consider where and when and what device people are receiving our message. It must feel natural and non-intrusive. I like to say, and a lot of this stuff looks like sort of social media, and it's not just all about social media, but one of the places that I think a lot of brands make the mistake is they think of social media as a distribution channel, and I like to think of it as more of a playground or relationship builder than a distribution channel. And so it's important to think about what are they doing and what are they seeking in value when they're in that medium, and how can you contribute to that value. One technique that we like to use is called we call it a diddle map, which is a day in the life map. If you picture the customer in every aspect of their day, you'll see many more places where you can offer, where your brand can offer value. But I want to talk about how brands offer value. There's an aspect of what a brand looks like, and I sort of simplify it right down to this, which is brands need to have really, really sharp corners. Most brands try to represent too many things to too many people. The best They all study, emulate, have tremendous growth and stability. They've established extremely sharp corners for themselves, the Apples, the Southwest, the Nikes. It doesn't mean they're not diverse companies with lots of different revenue streams and channels and product lines, but it means that they have very defined, sharp corners for how they approach those revenue channels and how they approach marketing those. So the consumer, and so here's how we bring that. So the first thing I think to developing a strong brand, for one, is finding your sharp corners. And developing sharp corners for your brand is a more of an exercise of saying no than it is an exercise of saying yes. You guys, brands have those sharp corners. Most of the time, they just layered on a bunch of stuff that are sort of hiding them or dulling their corners. Well, consumers have sharp corners too. When these, you know, as far as the way consumers look at how they find themselves in their world, how they find themselves in their brands and the things that they buy, the things that they wear, the things that they eat. They have things that represent who they are. They don't put it down in a strategic plan, but they feel it and they live it every day. And our goal is to intersect with their lives and finding the places where our core values overlap. This is what I call the relevance overlap. And I'm going to show you a couple of examples of how you can put that to use. Because what a lot of brands do is they say, hey, we like the same things you do, come buy from us, right? I'm oversimplifying, but we all seen a lot of ads that basically say, you think something's cool, we think something's cool, so you should shop with us. Doesn't quite work that way with the consumers. One example that's actually the start of this story is a couple years old, but I've updated it to really show the impact that it's had on the marketing landscape. Oreo, a couple years back at the Super Bowl in New Orleans, did something that was pretty interesting and got a lot, talked about a lot. You guys have probably heard about. But so let's talk about Oreo's sharp corners. First of all, they're a cookie. So, you know, their sharp corners are going to be enjoyment, entertainment, you know, kind of humor and wit. You know, they're not going to get too serious with us. And they knew that they wanted to have some sort of impact during the Super Bowl. They didn't want to spend millions of dollars on advertising, so they said, okay, how can we be relevant? They knew that 42%, they laid the landscape a little bit. A lot of Americans, like I showed you with the screen where they're looking at devices and doing multiple things, watch TV with a second screen. They knew that Twitter led the pack for social TV watching. And Twitter's popular platform for NFL viewers. And obviously they could tie into the relevance of a snack during the Super Bowl party. So when the lights went out in the Superdome, they tweeted this picture. And I'm going to talk about how they did it. How did they, while the lights were out, which no one could have predicted, did they then put this picture out? They got them tons of results and lots of recognition as a brand and lots of connectivity. You can still dunk in the dark. Well, a couple things. Obviously, and these stats are I think, sort of the immediate stats that we found right after it happened. I would say they're probably six or seven fold this at this point. But they got tremendous retweets, tremendous social media recognition, and lots of earned value, and they've made it into several marketing presentations, I'm almost certain. But how did they do that? First of all, they were what I would. I'm a little bit out of order here. Let me skip. No, I'm gonna. Yeah, I am gonna. Where is my slide for that? All right, I'm gonna keep trucking here. There's a couple things that they did that I like to say is they were proactively. Oh, there it is on the next slide. Sorry, we got the tech going here. Push to audience. Okay, here's what they did. First of all, they were proactively reactive. Which means they were ready to take advantage of things that were happening. That's the flexibility part. If you try to set in place, we're going to do something, you know, fantabulous at the Super Bowl when the lights go out, you can't predict that. You can't put that into a marketing plan. But you can say, we're going to lock away part of our budget and our resources to take advantage of large events and situations that happen in our society and find places that we can bring relevance through entertainment. And so that's what they did, and that's why we're there. They essentially had this war room ready to go with some copywriters and some and an art director and probably a little bit of legal and some sort of someone else that could sign off and, you know, probably a few 12-packs of Bud Light. And they were ready to go when something happened, and they put it out there. And their company and their executives gave them that trust to execute that. The what I like about this one is, and I'm going to talk about kind of the impact they had on the industry, is the next year they said they were out. There was so much recognition about what happened that they preemptively put a message out that actually also got a lot of recognition, and that was kind of neat. But what I like is what other brands have started doing. So now you have brands, you know, like DiGiorno and JCPenney and a few others, actually many others, that are starting to not only sort of talk to each other, but prepare to take advantage and humanize, you know, the big social events that are going on, like what Arby's did with Steve Farrell's hat, I thought was wonderful at the Grammys, got a lot of recognition. And then you even had brands kind of talking to each other. And the main thing to take away from this, be proactively reactive, and be human. Be okay with getting in there and just participating and adding value. They did a great job with that. So the next example, I got a little video here I'm going to play for you, is Nike's Air Max. Okay, so they were, their sharp corners for this product is self-expression and personalization. Obviously to go with what Nike considers their sharp corners, which is fitness and being active and all that kind of thing were still in this brand. But the sort of sub-corner that they had on this particular brand was that self-expression personalization on this campaign. So what they wanted to do was kind of tap into that creative expression platform we all know as Pinterest. It's 80 million people on their crave personalized experience. They're motivated by self-expression. You know, and they pulled a couple other sort of insights to light, which is essentially 4 out of 5 consumers use smartphones to shop, and 55% of consumers share their purchases online, which sounds crazy, but if you think about what online means, through social media, through connecting with friends, through sharing on the more formal ones we all know about, and how many purchases, I've bought a car, or I've even bought a new pair of shoes or whatever it might be, you know, shopping with the kids for shoes, all that kind of stuff is so ubiquitous in how we live our lives and in social media. So this video, it was about to play, so I wanted to intro it just a tad. This video that I'm going to show you is a wonderful campaign they put together where they brought to life an app that's seamlessly integrated with Instagram and allowed people to customize their shoes based on an Instagram photo that they took, and then they could essentially order those shoes that were very customized and very related to them. It's a neat little campaign video that I'm going to let you watch real quick. I love that video. Hopefully the technology worked for you. The way this campaign sort of worked, it generated 100,000 shoes. 100,000 shoes were generated inside the app in the first week. So over 600 an hour. And they had 8% click-through to buy shoes. Now, you don't even have to be in retail marketing to know that kind of click-through rate and that kind of engagement is tremendous. And obviously they spent zero on media, but they spent money on technology, and that's kind of the thing that I want to talk about is investing in the experience and in that engagement and how people interact with your brand is a place that where spending needs to go up and actually making that one of the things they did was they made that experience really seamless. It wasn't like a lot of hoops to jump through, go, this isn't like working on Instagram. They made it feel very sort of natural. And they obviously invested in technology and platforms that already existed. And they added value. And in this case, they actually added retail value and helped people shop in a way that was more interesting to them. So very much connected to revenue-driving tactics. The next example I want to talk to you about is the Honda CR-V, which is a great example of utilizing Pinterest in a way that, and what I want you to make sure that you do is you focus on sort of kind of reverse engineering, and that's kind of what I'm trying to help you do, reverse engineer how they use the platform. The fact that a couple of these are social media oriented, I don't want that to skew to say that these are social media strategies. It's really about driving relevance and connecting and finding that overlap with the consumer. And I think a lot of brands are struggling in how to do that in all the technology and the way the consumer is interacting. So these examples, you know, are quote-unquote in social media. If you could call Pinterest social media, really it's a platform for shopping and dreaming that has social media weaved in. So it is more of a broader channel than I think than just social media. So the Honda CR-V sharp corners were get out there and living. They had a campaign, you know, out there called the Leap List that encouraged people to get out there and enjoy something new. It promoted adventure and spontaneity. Basically, cross something off your bucket list. So when you went out to, you know, so how do we see the sharp corner can be activated and mainstream is easy to communicate, but how do you actually connect to that in the Pinterest world? Well, the one thing I can tell you can't do is put pretty pictures of the interior of your car on Pinterest and think people are going to pin it and therefore want to buy it. It's just not going to happen. We all know that. So, but there's a couple of insights that did want to kind of make sure that they were connecting to. First of all, they were there in the millions, 70 million people on Pinterest, and way past that now, I'm sure. And we know that Pinterest is a site for dreamers. It's a place where people like to collect things and think about things, and it's for people that crave ideas and they're inspired by beauty. So once again, I did it again. Hold on, I'm going to come back and set up this video a little bit. What's neat about this video is it's sort of a case video of showing what they did in Pinterest. But a little bit, I'm going to describe what they did so the video makes sense, is they made pin posters that pushed people to sort of take what they call a Pinter mission. And they asked people to say, what would you do if we gave you $500 to get off Pinterest and bring something you pinned to life? And so supporting that getting out there and living. So here's that video. All right. I love that video. Hopefully, again, it played well for you. A couple things that they obviously had some tremendous results. They had, you know, 4.5 million interactions. And what I love about interactions or sort of slash engagement and why I think that they're so valuable versus even an impression, you see they had 40 million impressions. But when a consumer decides to take an action and a click or a post or a repost or a mention or a forward, that is, it actually sort of connects in their mind. It creates a little connection between that action and the brand, and that having the will to take that action is so much more valuable than an impression. So for them to get 4.5 million interactions, I think is tremendous. And I also like to laugh that the cost was $2,500. They gave five different people $500. Obviously, they invested in some really cool agency and some other good strategic things and creative and things like that to make this happen. But what it goes to show you is it doesn't always have to be about the media campaign. They studied the platform, what people were doing, and the art cards they used were very much what you would see on Pinterest already, and therefore had a high likelihood of sharing. We actually recently did a campaign on Pinterest, one of the first ones for a home goods retailer, Kirkland's, and we found just by removing the promotional message in the description of the art cards, our share rate went up by 50%. You have to consider what people are used to seeing in that platform and what they're comfortable with seeing. It's kind of like why tattoos on faces aren't popular, because they're too awkward for other people to look at. And so make sure that you're paying attention to how people are comfortable interacting with that platform. Don't use social media as a distribution channel. The Leap List ads that were kind of sort of drove that campaign wouldn't have made nearly the splash on Pinterest as they did on YouTube. But this slight shift in the message and the understanding of the platform allowed them to take the message here and not interrupt, but rather intersect. And that's the key point that I want to push you to do is reverse engineer how these campaigns are working and what people are doing to connect with that consumer. So to kind of sort of, a couple things that they obviously did from a fundamental standpoint is they incented the share. It's one of the places that works really well, and we find that if you incent the share, you're going to get about 20% of your engaged users to share. When you're talking about 4.5 million engagements, that's a pretty significant return. Obviously, they studied the creative style of the platform. I just talked about that, and I also talked about the third bullet as well. So the world, to kind of close up with a couple of comments here, and I'm happy to take conversation or questions here in a few minutes, but the world of marketing technology and human behavior have all collided. And there's a couple of important aspects that I want you to kind of take away from what I'm presenting today. First of all, build flexibility into your plan. I think it should be at least 20%, and I think it could be as high as 30%. But I do want to clarify that does not mean a rainy day fund. There's a difference between being proactively reactive and taking advantage of things and putting money where things are working well and moving dollars around and having flexibility in your marketing versus saving money for a rainy day. You've got to be aggressive. You got to think like a scientist, try things, and really that's what that money is for, is about trying things, maybe with lower expectations. Just like a scientist would, they're going to have hypothesis, they're going to try things, and they're going to build things on. And then the next part that is very important is uncover your brand sharp corners. Know what they are. Be brave in carving other things away and saying no to them. Literally all the brands that we seek to go see presentations by and that we love to buy from, and I always like to say, how many people have bought a Mac computer with a coupon? No one has, because they don't need to discount, and they haven't had to ever discount, and they probably won't ever have to discount. If they do start putting out coupons, you know it's the beginning of the end. But it's about defining your sharp corners and living them, and then finding that relevance. And that's what those case studies were all about, is understanding what's important to how your customers view the world and how they view themselves, and then putting yourself in a relevant space. But do it in a way that offers value, doesn't just deliver message. And that's the difference, I think, between being a straight advertiser and being someone that works in the modern world of marketing, which is it's more about engagement and actually even involvement. we're sort of preparing a chapter two of this presentation that really talks about consumers don't just want to be engaged. They actually want to be involved. They want to help co-create. They want to be part of the R&D process, which is even more exciting and maybe even a little more scary for some brands out there. But there are a lot of brands having a lot of success there. So that is my sort of presentation for the era of the marketing scientist. And I know that it may sound like, a lot to do to transform culture and transform belief. And I do believe that you can show ROI and you can produce numbers. That's what's great about the world that we live in, is even when you try things, my belief is that transparency is more important than success. Of course, you want to be successful as much as you possibly can. But if you're not transparent and you hide your failures, you're going to get less opportunities to be successful. And so it's really important to kind of be open, track things, and sometimes say, we don't know if this is going to work, but we've got a hunch that it does. We haven't bet the farm on it, but we have a really big upside if it does work. And so hopefully you guys can all be more like marketing scientists based on some of the things I presented today. And that's kind of a wrap of what I have formally, if anybody has some questions.
Hey, Tim. Thank you very much. I was letting you finish before I came back. So, everyone, I see a couple questions, but I'd love a lot more, so please send them in. The first question for you is how to change up a campaign on Pinterest. This is very specific, from a national business to a local one.
Sure. I actually think, and I know I sort of get that question, a fair bit, because there are more small and medium businesses than there are mega brands out there doing marketing. And I believe the exact same rules apply. Is identify your sharp corners, find the sharp corners of the audience, and find ways to be relevant with those people. And a lot of people look at your database differently. A lot of people used to look at database as what's in my, direct mail database. And then they started to really kind of shift to the paradigm of who's in my email database. Now it's anyone that's in your entire network, your Facebook likes, your Instagram follows, your Twitter follows, your emailers, your store visitors. All these people are, quote unquote, your database. And so small and medium-sized businesses need to treat that database as their number one asset. How do you grow it? How do you understand it? How do you drive relevance and connection within it? And so, Red Pepper is not a big company, and we do the same things for ourselves. And so I think that's the thing is find out what your customers are doing on Pinterest, let them know you're there and offer value, and I think you'll be able to find some ways to connect.
This one is I'm not quite sure how – I'm very curious to hear how you'll answer this one, because this one sounds a little nebulous to me. Have you ever brought your customers in more explicitly to help you market more effectively?
Oh, definitely. And that's that involvement stuff that I was talking about. And, the natural place to start is with those core customers or super fans, where they actually, we've all heard the term crowdsourcing. And it's this big, it's kind of like got the same nebulous meaning as like cloud computing. What does that mean? That mean it's in the crowd or in the cloud? And what does it mean for crowdsourcing? What crowdsourcing means is involving the consumer in places that are earlier than you might find natural or normal. And that's what we've done that several times. We actually just recently did a campaign with Claire's, the jewelry store, where we had their social media networks help design the next best friend necklace. And we actually made the necklace and put it out there in the stores. And so I think there's lots of ways to involve them. It's more about the – yeah, go ahead.
How did the best friend necklace do?
It went so well that they did it again. So that was good. So when you have a mega corporation try something that feels risky, and then they want to do it again, it goes pretty well. I mean, it went pretty well.
Do you specifically hire based on the kind of things that people can do or the mindset they have. The question that that evolves out of was, what age do you have for the people who created the Pinter mission campaign?
Well, I'm a huge believer that people are a product of their environment. And I think a lot of people feel that as people maybe get older in our profession, that they're not as relevant. If they are growing, they can actually be more powerful and more relevant because they have experience to tie into it. But what happens in a lot of cases is that people don't unlearn as many things as they learn. So they sort of get stuck in their ways, and it's sort of hard to put new things in the mind. And so the easy way for management is to hire young people that their mindset's sort of already there. But if you really want to transform a company and you really want to stay relevant for decades on end, it has to be a company-wide culture shift of people constantly learning new things and unlearning old things. That's why we make it a number one core value. It literally is on our door. Right as soon as you walk in our door, it's the first thing everyone sees. And we talk about it all the time because it's very hard. Everyone, we get to quote-unquote sit around and be creative all day, but people inherently fear change and fear, learning that they might be wrong about something. So it's not, sure, we have a lot of young people here and a lot of innovative brands have young people, but the truth of it is the ones doing great, great things have a lot of experience, smart, growing people in their company.
How can you show a brand that something was valuable if they don't see ROI?
Well, I see another question in there, which is how do you convince higher-ups and the investment in this kind of thing and the value of the database and that kind of stuff? You have to make marketing tangible. I like to call it sort of that under-the-arm effect is if the people in the marketing department can't hold the value of what they're working on in their hand, underneath their arm, and take it around to different meetings and bring it to life, they'll never bring the executive wing along. Because they don't live this all the time. They live it in budget setting meetings, and they live it in budget cutting meetings, and they live it in, you know, big giant sign-offs, and it's just very important to sort of bring them along the way. One of the key ways we've done this with our brands is to help establish a monetary value of somebody inside the database versus somebody not in the database. And it's not really that difficult. You can do essentially a study from a couple of different angles, but do a study of how much they shop, how much they spend, and just start to identify. And we actually found that they're worth about 30 to 40% more, somebody inside the database, because they're closer to the brand. They're okay with being associated and being communicated with and interacting with the brand. And they tend to spend 30 or 40% more with the brand. So you can go to the executives and say, these 400,000 people in our database are worth $10 million. And the advertising that is reaching $20 million that you really want to see your commercial on TV, those people are only worth $1 million. And you can start to sort of weigh out the investments that way.
And the last one. So it looks like a few people are talking about small firms, so they need to take this at a step-by-step session. Right after finding your sharp corner, what is the next step they should take?
Establishing the brand sharp corners, and then what should they do? Yeah, I think it's finding the sharp corners of the consumer, understanding their lives. If you go through those two exercises, which, can take a little bit of work, but they're extremely long-term valuable. I mean, you talk about establishing the brand sharp corners. That's not the kind of thing that lasts you a quarter. It lasts you years. If not forever, it's really kind of the foundation of how you build a brand is through what it stands for and what its sharp corners are. You do the same thing with the consumer. And what will happen is you'll just see, they'll start popping up places that you can be relevant. And then I think the third part of that equation is what I was trying to make in those cases is to say it's not about then shouting your relevance. It's about being relevant. So
okay.
Demonstrating relevance.
Sorry, I'm going to have to... Yeah. I'm going to have to stop us because we're at the end here. On behalf of Target Marketing and Printing Impressions Magazines and Acton, thank you for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge so you can chat live with other session attendees. Please also visit the information booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Remember, if you miss anything today, the entire virtual show will be archived. The on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting on Monday. Have a great day, everyone.